Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we're jumping about 16 hours into the future, where Stephen Wilkinson is waiting for us in Sydney, Australia. They've had some more draconian lockdowns there through COVID, although it's releasing now. But we're going to find out from Stephen how engineering has been different during these lockdowns. What's been different about broadcast engineering? Chris Tarr is here too, coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from this microphone to that light bulb from the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee, where it's another wintry, dreary day here in Nashville. And we've got a big storm coming in, going to bring in ice and snow and or not. Just depends on if it goes a little north or south. And we're going to talk to Chris and Stephen, our guest, about weather and pandemic and lockdowns and how engineering has maybe changed. And we're going to do all that here in just a minute. Glad that you're here. Thanks a lot to Telos Alliance for giving me a little bit of time every Thursday to do the show, to come to you and to chat with you and to bring you some interesting guests from all over the world. All right, enough about me. Chris Tarr is here, my co-host. Chris, good to see you. Welcome in.
Hey there, Kirk. It is doesn't sound as nearly as dreary as it is for you today. It's a little bit of sun out here, and it was up above 30, which means the snow is melting, which is better than the 2 below that we had the other day when I was out at a transmitter site. So it is getting nicer, and the sun has been out a little bit, so life's good. Life's good. Are you feeling better?
I am. Thank you for asking. I've been very sick. For those of you wondering, I did not have the COVID. Although I don't know why I haven't had it, but that I got two negative COVID tests. But I suffer for the past 3.5 weeks. I've had acute bronchitis, and that's bad stuff. I've never had bronchitis, at least not to that degree before. I had to get the inhaler and the albuterol to try to open up some of my bronchial tubes just so I could cough more stuff up. So I don't wish bronchitis on anybody. I think I mentioned it last week. I'm not going to belabor the point, but I think I spent New Year's Eve. I did spend New Year's Eve in a hospital ER because I was just coughing absolutely constantly. And that's a lonely drive, driving yourself to a hospital ER.
Well, it sounds like you didn't have acute bronchitis. It sounds like you had an ugly bronchitis. Dead joke. Thank you. I am a dad.
How's your health?
Too, so, you know.
How's your health?
I have been so lucky. Honestly, I've not, through all of this, I have not gotten sick from when COVID first started. And I mean, I travel quite a bit to transmitter sites and, that kind of thing. But, I've been very careful about what I've done. And, I have a daughter who, is in public school every day. My middle son works at Walmart. I'm really kind of surprised, pleasantly surprised, but yeah, no, I've been doing just fine through all this.
And, I don't know if, getting it or not getting it seems to have anything with what we've done or what we do. Of course, we understand viruses and a little bit about their aerosol behavior. There's stupid things we could do and there's smart things that we can do. And yet sometimes it seems like people who have been pretty smart, pick up the virus anyway. And people who haven't been smart, and I'm not saying I haven't been smart, but honestly, after the first few months, I put a mask on when other people have masks on.
Sure.
When in Rome sort of thing, right?
Sure.
As the Romans do. But if nobody's wearing a mask, I tend not to, unless, hey, I was actually back kind of early on in this thing. Our Sunday school class started meeting again and they had the windows closed and it just felt stuffy in there. I'm not kind of a Karen about these things, but I said, hey guys, can we open the windows at least? It is so stuffy in here that I just felt like if there's something in the air, it's around me. And so
that's been the thing for me is, I just keep air moving around and You know, the best thing to do is I just try to stay hydrated and healthy and you know, eat well and sleep well, because just like everything else, you know, if your body is in pretty good shape going in, you know, it doesn't mean you're not going to get it, but, you know, you probably won't get nearly as sick, where if you're just running around ragged and tired all the time and that kind of thing, you know, if you get hit, it will probably affect you much worse. So I think you're right. It's, you know, a lot of people are saying it's a matter of when and not if. So you just got to try to do the best you can to be prepared for it. So, but, you know, I had a little bit of a head cold a while back, but other than that, I've been healthy.
And that said, I want to make sure, and I think we all feel the same way, that we would certainly mourn anybody's loss and realize that there has been tragic, tragic loss, and a lot of it, loss of lives, of friends and relatives and so forth. So I don't mean to diminish that whatsoever, even if people perhaps did everything supposedly right.
Right.
This virus seems no very little respecter of persons and their efforts.
Yeah, Shane Tovin mentioned that, and I can't remember the phrase he used, but, you know, it really was, it's something along the lines of the virus doesn't care, you know, yeah. If you've been, you know, really good, really bad, you know, it just does its own thing. And, you know, if your number comes up, it does. And, you know, Shane has been really, and I know you follow him on Facebook too. He's been very open about his struggle with it. And fortunately he's better, but you're right. I mean, we've lost a lot of good people recently, and, you know, and I know that, you know, they all were careful, and, you know, as we all are, but Steve and I were talking, and I'm sure he'll get into this shortly, how, you know, who would have thought 3 years ago that we'd still be dealing with this and in this way, and, you know, is it ever going to get back to being the same again? I mean, we've already, business-wise, you know, we're selling off a lot of our office space because we're just going to permanently stay virtual, because, you know, there's just no reason to go back, and it's working fine now. And with all of these continuing variants and things like that, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to go back to being in the office.
You know, this is, and thanks for bringing Steven up. Let's bring Steven in. If Sun Cass, if you want to do that triple box shot, that's pretty amazing. Stephen Wilkinson is our guest today. Stephen is here from Sydney, Australia, and I've known Stephen for some years. Stephen, I guess you and I met probably 15, 16, maybe 17 years ago when I first started doing international work for Telos Alliance.
Yeah.
Back then it was Telos Omnia Axia, and met you maybe at a community radio show or something. Anyway, Stephen, welcome in from Sydney, Australia. Good to see you.
Thanks, Kirk. Yeah, it's great to be talking to you from the future.
We'll explain that, and you know, most people get it, not everybody does. Years ago I was married to somebody who just didn't get this at all. Anyway, so we're recording this live on Thursday, what is today, the 13th of January, 5 p.m Eastern time, 4 p.m where I am. It's 4:09 now, but Stephen, you're already into Friday, and therefore Friday, you've got the Powerball numbers for us, right?
Yeah, sure. It's a 5 and it's Friday morning, and it's what is it? It's 9:09 a.m.
So, oh, that's not too bad. Okay, I was worried you were getting up super early, like 6 o'clock or something,
well,
to join
us. It's summertime here, so we're in daylight savings time. So I'm a bit ahead now. So not as early.
So Stephen, I know you've got thoughts about broadcast operations. We're going to, of course, relate this back to engineering and how your job may have been different during this pandemic thing. And we want to hear from you. We're going to bring Stephen in and talk about how things have been different in Australia. You know, on the news here, we have certainly heard about lockdowns that to us seem even more draconian than what a few cities and a few states in the U.S. have been doing during this time. And I know that you guys are, like many places, having a big surge in the Omicron strain cases there. And yet they're maybe relaxing things a bit there. So we're going to get into that. I'm curious to know, since you guys have had such big lockdowns, and after our first spot break, we'll get into this. But how listenership changed, how people's listening habits changed. You didn't have people, you know, captive in cars so much, as people weren't going to work because they were locked down, but maybe they were, you know, in their homes, maybe watching TV, maybe some listening to the radio. maybe more streaming. I don't know. We're going to get into all that coming up. excuse me. And I'm not quite over my own bronchitis. This week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by, and I'm going to switch up the order here, Suncast, brought to you in part by our friends at Max Connect Wireless. You know, they make 4G LTE modem service. They don't make the modems. They make the service that gives you priority data, even in crowded situations or at lonely transmitter sites. Here's Gary Morrill to tell us about that.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
There's Gary Moore holding his, and I'm holding a different one. This is a Pepwave 4G LTE modem. And the difference, of course, is not the LTE modem itself. It's the service. Max Connect Wireless has its own APNs, its own connection points into your wireless carrier. And you get prioritized data because Max Connect has worked that out with each of the U.S. carriers, the major carriers, whether it's AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, or Sprint, whichever is your favorite carrier or offers you the best coverage in your area, you can sign up for coverage on that network. So talk to Max Connect Wireless. Josh Bone has really put together a fantastic service here. And whether it's a lonely transmitter site where you can't otherwise get internet or live remote broadcasts and even remote broadcasts from crowded venues, go to maxconnect.com, MAXXKONNECT. We'll have a link in the show notes. All right. I want to talk to you for a minute about headphone amps from Angry Audio. Angry Audio is this really cool company. They get it. They totally get it. In fact, Suncast is going to show you the main webpage at Angry Audio because they make this huge variety of different products. In fact, if you want to scroll down there and we'll look at some of the different products there. There you go. There's the Bluetooth audio gadget. You can put this in your control room at your audio console and connect your phone in the highest quality way possible, whether it's for two-way phone calls or for just playing audio off your phone. You have a headphone gizmo, the mic tally gizmo, the button gizmo, the guest gizmo. You've got the mic tally gadget, balancing gadgets, and talk show gadgets, all kinds of things to make small studios work more like big studios or to outfit big studios, nice studios, with some real good amenities that your talent needs anyway. Here is, for example, the headphone gizmo that I'm holding right here, a beautiful little powerful headphone amp. You can power three of these off of one power supply. Just insert the power here, and then you can daisy chain that power from one amp to another using ordinary Cat 5 cable. It's got both kinds of headphone connectors, 3.5 millimeter and quarter inch tip ring sleeve. And then a good deal of headphone volume is available. And it's got this nice curved look to it as well. You can screw it right up underneath the console, or you can turn it this way and just lay it on top of the surface if you want to. They also have the line of Studio Hub headphone amps, like this one that was originally come out from Studio Hub, but now Angry Audio is building it under the Studio Hub name. And it's in a Decora package. So you can put this into a junction box, into an ordinary box. You can put Decora panel over the top of it and make it look really pretty. You can power four of these off of one power supply. And don't forget about the headphone disconnector. This is a cool invention from Angry Audio. You just put this in line with your headphone cord at the amp. And if somebody gets up and walks away, you don't have a repair to make. You just have a magnet to put back together. That's it. Check it out, angryaudio.com. Their products are available from all your favorite dealers, but you can go to their website first and pick out what you want at angryaudio.com. All right, it's This Week in Radio Tech, number 578. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Chris Tarr, and Stephen Wilkinson is here. Chris and Stephen, I'm going to ask you guys to chit-chat just a bit. Chris, maybe you've got some questions for Stephen. And Stephen, if you just want to roll into it, talk to us about what things have been like with lockdowns and kind of what your engineering world has been like with these with almost everybody staying at home.
Thanks, Kirk. With lockdown, at the end of last year, we had a lockdown of about 5 months, and it was probably the most extreme that we had had. And certain government areas and where people couldn't go from local council areas to other local councils. That's how locked down it was. What we found from a listener point of view is that, of course, the day parts shifted. People weren't driving in their cars, and people were at home. They're probably getting up late, most people might turn the radio on in the morning as they're getting ready, and then have it on in the car, or at least just have it on in the car as they're driving to work. And Sydney is quite a big city. It's about an area which has about 5.5 million people. So to drive, most people drive for anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour and a half at the most to drive to work. So, sort of commuting, that sort of thing. So what we found was that the day parts shifted. People weren't driving, so they weren't listening in what we call the breakfast shift, which, is like 6 a.m. till 9 a.m. We call that breakfast. And then our mornings is from 10 a.m. till sort of 9 a.m. till midday. So we found that the audience did actually shift to the more of the morning's time rather than the usual higher listening time of breakfast. So then people were actually listening at home rather than in the car. But of course, it was later in the day, so they'd have it on at home while they were working from home. So majority of people were having to work from home. Those of us who were exempt because of the areas that we worked in, like working in media, you're exempt from it. The traffic was really good. The lack of it, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because Chris Tarr, maybe you downloaded that that letter that NAB put out, that maybe it was a reprint from the Department of Homeland Security here in the U.S. that said, hey, this person's authorized to travel. Because there were some states that were saying, hey, don't be on the road unless you got to be on the road. And so this actually, I think there were two letters. One of them let you buy fuel if there was any question about it. And the other letter was just said, yeah, this person's doing doing work in mass communications. And it's important that this person be allowed to travel. Chris Tarr, did you see that letter?
Yeah, I had the letter, but I also have a State Department of Justice ID that let me get through too, to different places. And as Steve said, it was great because there for about 6 months there was no traffic at all wherever I needed to get anywhere. And all of a sudden, when there was traffic, I'm like, oh, wait a minute, what's going on here? I certainly can feel that way. I know exactly what you're talking about. So, Stephen, what were some of the things you did? Now, were any of your people working remotely before this, or did you kind of have to dive into this as this happened?
Well, as it happened, 2 years ago in 2020, it was a bit of like we already had remote access for people, if they needed to get in and work on certain, music scheduling or getting content into the system, then they could do that. We're in Sydney, we have nearly up to 50 staff in our Sydney office. And so all of a sudden having that nearly all of that amount of people working from home and wanting to, work as normal was a big change. And so we did scramble at the beginning of 2020 in trying to accommodate that. We had some things already in process, like adding Teams and setting up Teams, Microsoft Teams as a way of communicating, but also a way of having folder shares and you know, document sharing that way amongst the different teams and that sort of thing. So we just had to sort of expand on that a lot more quickly and training people how to use it. And that's been a big part of what we're having to do is, as far as support tickets, if you like, is people trying to do things from home or trying to use the different software to be able to work.
Well, we found, at least I found that, as we went on with this, we found that there are actually we discovered some new efficiencies and things with kind of this new paradigm that we've had to follow with COVID. Have you found that same kind of thing where all of a sudden you're starting to do things where you go, this actually works better than it was beforehand? Either be it, the way you're utilizing equipment for delivery or for voice tracking or even just some of the things you're doing for remote work. Have you found some new techniques or new things that came up that you went, wow, I got to stash this away. This actually, was a little bit of good that came out of having to scramble with this.
Well, we found that using apps within Teams has actually been a good way of people being able to remotely access different types of software and functions. So for it to be in one place, rather than someone having to either use a VPN or use using remote desktop, a remote desktop server, they're actually being able to do it through Teams. And then it's also we were in the process of trying to move, because we were mainly an on-prem organization. We had Microsoft 365, and that was our mail hosting. But a lot of the sort of, my documents, the files were people, on local servers. So as we were already sort of trying to move to using SharePoint and that sort of thing and OneDrive, all those sort of functions to be able to take their files with them more easily has been a godsend and has forced that to happen a lot quicker during that time. So
gotcha. Another question. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, one thing that was kind of interesting that Charlie Wooten brought up kind of early on in this pandemic, because I interviewed him, he's an engineer in the Florida Panhandle area, that they ran out of, they didn't have enough codecs, traditional broadcast codecs from Telos or Tyline or Comrex. And so they ended up using Microsoft Teams for their audio participation, actual contribution audio, from their morning show hosts. They liked being able to see each other, but they felt that the audio quality, specifically on Teams, was plenty good for their contribution audio. Steven, you guys are kind of tied into the Microsoft world there, it sounds like. What'd you think about that for contribution audio?
Yeah, the advantage, we're in the Microsoft ecosystem, mainly because of being a not-for-profit. It's very good rates, if not almost free. So that's part of the being in the Microsoft ecosystem. But yes, that was what our things. They're always with Teams and Zoom and all of those. They're always making improvements. But we found that early on as well, that Teams audio quality was actually better than Zoom at the time. So we were using Teams, sort of video conferencing and interviewing. People were interviewing, remote guests, because we wouldn't have guests in the actual studio. So we tried to always have as many, guests as we could into the studio for our on-air guys. And mainly because we're sort of trying to introduce that as a video element as well. So using Teams or Zoom for your remote guests, we found, of course, audio quality was a lot better. We also did have duos, on-air duos. We had them operating some half the duo operating from home. And we were using things like clean feed and the teams at times rather than having a tie line codec or, you know, permanently at somebody's house, we found that that was a more convenient way of actually bringing in hosts or, you know, or guests remotely.
So I'm curious about how your day-to-day workflow with, from you as an engineer going to transmitter sites, you know, once you got people connected, and Chris Tarr, you can answer this too. Once you got people connected and things were like, okay, we're kind of settled in now, everybody's working from home, things can be all right. What then happened to your routine in terms of visiting transmitter sites or revisiting studios? How did your workflow change? And maybe it's still changed, maybe even until just very recently when some of the lockdowns have been lifted, Stephen.
Well, we were starting to, after lockdowns were lifted in, you know, in sort of end of October last year, 21, we were starting to ramp up again with a few more people in the building. And during lockdown, we just had sort of one, there's myself and I have two other guys work with me in Sydney. And we would just have one person on site, you know, Monday to Friday. But we're sort of ramping that up to be able to have multiple of us there, which, you know, is helpful when trying to get installation projects happening and that sort of thing, introducing new things. It's more than just one person on site. So we were trying to start to ramp that up. But as the current variant has propagated more and we're now even just from Christmas gone back to having to cut it down to being only one person on site at a time just to avoid the any chance of anybody being a close contact. So that will the other guys working from home and helping support that way remotely with our people working from home, but we sort of had to ramp it back down to sort of almost lockdown sort of status as far as from an organization, mainly just to protect the organization and protect the on-air staff from picking up anything. You could one day go to the shopping center and become a positive contact, and you might have something, you might not have something, but you don't want to be passing that on to anybody at work, no matter how stringent you are with masks and washing hands and sanitizing and that sort of thing.
Chris, based on your Facebook post, I'm guessing you take care of about 250 transmitter sites. or maybe it seems that way some days. What's your workflow been like in the last few months here? Is it, you feel it's kind of returning to a normal? And what's normal for all the number of transmitter sites and studios that you're responsible for?
I was just going to say, you know, I think I always hate the phrase new normal, but, you know, I think we've come up with kind of what I consider new normal for our business. And I think there are quite a few broadcast companies that are kind of leaning the same way in that we're mostly virtual now with our offices, and I think we're going to stay that way. In terms of transmitter sites, not much has changed. I mean, obviously you still have to go out there. And so I still do, the same amount of traveling that I did before. Obviously, you know, with hotels and things like that, you know, you need to be a lot more careful. But one of the interesting things is we're downsizing our buildings quite a bit because, you know, even now we're advertising for account executives. And one of the things we're putting in the ad is it's partially work from home. We're setting people up now. We just got a new facility for our lacrosse stations. It's about a quarter of the size of the building that we're in now. And there's a couple of desks. And basically it'll happen is people will kind of rotate in and out. Some will probably never be there. You know, they'll just always work from home. But we've refined all of the voice tracking and things like that, where most of the people who are on the air can do that from home. Now, there are some things that we have to do. There are some morning shows that are, you know, very call-in intensive. And even then, I'm working on ways to move that offsite as well. So, you know, we've really, my workflow has changed in that I've been really been technology driven in terms of how can we, you know, make things happen without people being there. You know, I've worked around ways now to cleanly get sporting events on the air without board ops, you know, using, you know, Axia to control different things. So that, you know, that's really been my thing is, you know, I think a lot of this were things that radio would eventually get to because a lot of other industries are there already. But I think, you know, as you guys know, radio sometimes is the last to embrace these sorts of things. You know, Stephen was saying with Teams and Microsoft, there are a lot of radio groups that still haven't gone down that road yet. Now we're on the Google side, so we use Google Meet and Google Drive and things, but we're doing the same thing. You know, we have our sales meetings now are all on Google Meet. So, and you know, we've always kind of been hesitant about that because kind of our way of thinking, or, you know, the corporate way of thinking is, well, are these people going to be productive if they're not sitting in an office? Well, honestly, they're more productive because instead of having to sit here from 9 to 5 and, excuse me, maybe they're not feeling productive that day, you know, we're still paying them to kind of sit around. Whereas, you know, we find that if we develop, you know, responsible employees, they'll work when they're effective and, you know, they'll actually get more done because they have the freedom to kind of set their own schedule. So, you know, long story short, you know, our workflow has changed a lot. And I don't think it's going to change back. I think it's going to, you know, we may hybrid it a little bit more when it's safer to be back into the office. We may have some people doing half and half. And to be fair, we have a couple of people who really like working in the office. And so we allow it. We go, okay, you know, here's some sanitizer. And, you know, we make accommodations for that. We have, you know, 2 or 3 people who just enjoy, especially working in an empty office because there's nobody around to bug them. But, you know, we kind of leave that open. And so I think going forward, that's what we'll do is we'll have some office space. If people want to use it or need to use it for meetings or whatever, they're welcome to it. If they're, you know, needing to be at home for some things, then, you know, we'll work there. We'll get you set up with one of our IP phone extensions and, you know, log into that. We use VPN for some things. And so, you know, I just think it's caused the industry to move forward a little bit with technology.
From a mental health point of view, yeah, we allow some people in the building because they really sort of need that interaction, especially if they live at home by themselves. they for their own mental health, really need to be around some people. So we've been allowing that, you know, of course, as you say, with people sanitizing and keeping clean and that sort of thing. But we also found that from a technology point of view that we've had to, you know, an admin person that generally would only work 9 to 5 and be in the office, they would generally have a desktop computer. So we spent a lot of 2021 moving people actually to laptops so that they could take their work computer home. But then that adds another element of support, and also how do you manage that laptop? So we've been looking at things like Intune, which allows you to remotely install and if you like, manage, you know, that work laptop. Yeah.
I hadn't heard of that utility. What's it called again?
Intune, which it's another Microsoft product, but it's sort of like how to active, you know, for Active Directory and domains and that sort of stuff to be able to remotely manage that machine rather than having to come back to the office and log on to the network type of thing.
Gotcha. It's This Week in Radio Tech, episode 578. I'm Kirk Hardack, along with my co-host Chris Tarr and Stephen Wilkinson from Sydney, Australia. He is the chief technology officer at Hope Media, and he also runs his own consulting firm there. And we're going to be asking Stephen about his own consulting work and going. He used to travel to a lot of radio stations. He's still doing that. It's coming up in just a few minutes. Also, I want to get into the idea that, hey, in the last few years, we've been looking at the virtualization of other industries like banking, of course, shopping, like with Amazon or others, telemedicine. I've used telemedicine now a couple times in the last 6 months. So we're going to talk about that and how what we're seeing in radio and broadcasting relates to what other industries have done and where we think it's going to go. This Week in Radio Tech, I'm Kirk Harnack, and our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Inovonics. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Gary Lerman. I'm Sales and Marketing Manager from Inovonics. I'm joined here by our President and CEO, Ben Barber. And we're here to tell you about two new products that we're very excited about. They're HD modulation monitors, the model 551 and 552. And Ben's going to take us through some of the features. Ben, what can you tell us about these?
The 551 has the big display, 7-inch touchscreen display. You can look at different parameters instantly by walking up to it and touching it, getting information that you need. It also has the LED displays for FM total modulation, left, right, FM, HD 1, 2, 3, and 4. The other thing that the 551 has is that it has full-time audio outputs on studio hub connectors on the back, both analog as well as AES digital. So you've got FM, HD 1 through 4 there full-time. The 552 doesn't have the display, doesn't have the metering, and doesn't have the full-time audio outputs, but the web interfaces are identical for remote viewing and monitoring.
Great. Thanks very much, Ben. These products are going to be available in January 2022. Contact us at InnovonicsBroadcast.com for more information. Thanks very much.
And you can also contact our friends at Broadcasters General Store. That's where you can buy Inovonics from and get a terrific price with sharp pencils and everything. Go to bgs.cc. That's Broadcasters General Store at bgs.cc. Or do what I do. You know, this old-fashioned thing called dialing their phone and talking to a real person, they still do that at Broadcasters General Store at 352-622-7700. That's 352-622-7700. Thanks a lot to Inovonics and to Broadcasters General Store for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Chris Tarr. We're talking with Stephen Wilkinson about engineering in Australia as we've moved through a pandemic, a little bit of a reprieve, and now maybe cases are going back up with the Omicron variant. And I want to talk a little bit about kind of where we are and the future. There's still an item I said we're going to cover and we should. Stephen, you have consulted with plenty of other radio stations, a lot of Christian broadcasters, community-sized broadcasters. How has that changed for you? Are you still traveling a lot to help people out at the transmitter sites and with their automations and such?
Early 2021, I did quite a bit of traveling. I think I did, mm-hmm. About four or six trips in that first 4 to 6 months. But then the Delta variant got worse and that sort of thing. So, and lockdowns and there was actually stopped people traveling between state borders. So I couldn't travel to Queensland or South Australia. And so I've had to help a lot of stations remotely. As part of my role actually at Hope Media is that I also oversee the tech department, if you like, for a station in Brisbane, in Queensland, and 96.5, and a smaller one on a little bit further north of Brisbane on the Sunshine Coast called Salt 106.5. So I oversee the tech for those three stations as part of my role for Hope Media. And we don't own them, but it's sort of like, if you like, a management agreement. And so I have one staff member that works with me in Queensland. I haven't spent a lot of one-on-one time with him. Talk to him every day and virtually talk to him via Teams, and we go through a lot of things that way. But it does make it difficult not being able to be there in person. And the important thing is to just the regular contact. And he, with the the guys that work with me in Sydney. All the four of us all are regularly communicating and meeting, if you like, daily, even if it's just for 15 minutes, just to be able to, you know, talk through what's happening and issues, and also planning of projects, which has been difficult because I haven't been able to be there to help implement them.
And before we look at future stuff, I got a question for each of you, and that is, what tools are you liking for good remote touching of equipment? And I'll start just because I've mentioned before on the show, I love TeamViewer, but I've never been excited about their financial model. It just doesn't seem to work for what I need to do. And I found a remote access program or service called dwservice.net. I think it's totally cool and okay. I give them a donation every month, a small donation that I feel is worthwhile, although you can use it for free, certainly. And that's one little tool that I like. I've got probably 40 or 50 computers at radio stations from Mississippi to Arkansas to Kauai to American Samoa that I have on DW Service, and I can bring up, you know, lots of different things. And then on all my browsers, I've got I've got that spread across with Chrome browser. And so I've got shortcuts, you know, bookmarks. So for each city, and you hit the city and bam, you get a whole list of all the equipment that you can browse into. So that's my little trade secret. That's what helps keep me sane, looking at whether it's an IP radio or another computer or a phone system, or an audio console, audio processor, whatever it may be. Stephen, maybe you can tell us a couple or three of the top tools that you have found to be really helpful to you in what you have to do in engineering.
So yeah, I have a paid version of TeamViewer because I apart from helping the stations that Hope Media helps, there's a whole lot of, as you were saying before, a lot of small Christian stations that are all generally volunteer run. There's generally no paid staff, and I've helped them over the years with upgrades. But you know, at times they'll want me to tweak something on their Axia desk or on their automation software. So I generally have the paid team viewer for that. Each of those organizations, because they're so small, they can generally, and they're not-for-profit, non-commercial, they can generally run the free version of TeamViewer. But you know, me connecting in as a paid subscriber negates that. The other one that a lot of stations use is called AnyDesk, and I think they're starting to move into a paid model. But a lot of not-for-profits are using AnyDesk as another remote user software. Yeah.
Chris, Tar, how about you? What are some of your favorite tools these days?
We also have the paid version of TeamViewer. I will probably expire that out here in another year or two and move on from there. But between that and we use our VPN system with VNC with a lot of machines inside of there. So that, I think, between the two of those covers a lot. there are a couple out there that, you know, are either lower cost or there's Zoho. There's also Remote PC. So there's a couple of those out there that'll do the same thing. But pretty much for accessing transmitter sites, all of our sites are connected via VPN. So I just get into one entry point, and I've got a couple for redundancy. I get into one entry point and see everything in all of our markets. So generally I'll do that. If I need something quick, I'll just do a team viewer into whatever computer I need to get into.
Hey, thinking about having all your sites connected to each other and thinking about the topic of ransomware, I'm guessing that you don't have much of any drives shared across networks. Maybe you're doing other techniques. Maybe you can or can't say, or should or shouldn't say what you're doing, but how are you, since you've got, you know, a bunch of places connected together, how are you taking care of not making sure they're connected for the purposes of malware?
Well, there, you know, there's, you know, there's always going to be a better mousetrap, and it's an arms race. But each building has a hardware device that does deep packet scanning and mostly zero-day ransomware scanning. You know, you can't ever guarantee it, but some of the things that kind of at least help prevent that is we don't use a hardware-based server. We use Google Drive or Dropbox or something similar, which has their own filtering involved. And we use Gmail for email services, and they do their own scanning. So, you know, generally, and our on-air systems don't see the internet. So there are things like that. So generally, you know, there's always that kind of balance between what's convenient and what's protected. And in theory, if somebody were to do ransomware in one market, it could spread. Although, again, even from through the VPN tunnel, it has to pass through these appliances that are scanning and checking for malware. So we still do have to rely on people being smart. But again, remember that most people now aren't in the network. You know, they're doing these things offsite. So, you know, it will never get into our network. So, you know, there are a few people where that might be the case, but generally it'll be people like myself that get in through, through VPN, and that will absolutely, you know, block anything that isn't allowed traffic through that connection. Okay. So, you know, again, I guess long story short is I don't really have anything that I can say will absolutely prevent it from happening, but it's certainly, I am using professional grade, enterprise grade equipment for monitoring and scanning for those things.
Good deal. Hey, let's move on to this topic that I would love to finish up on today. We've got another 15 minutes or so. So in other industries, we've seen things go to a more virtualized world. I have noticed certainly that banks, and I tend to bank at two different banks. I'm kind of closing one out and going to another local bank, but both banks have got fantastic websites now that really work well. My new bank can even connect to my old bank and let me transfer funds just by hitting a button at the new bank, and it goes and grabs money out of the old bank and brings it to the new bank. The apps seem to work really well. The websites seem to work really well. I was just actually today, I made a trip into my new bank, physical trip. I stopped by there. I was on doing an errand today. And, you know, there's nobody in there. It's just, it's a big, beautiful building, and it's just as quiet as can be. And I can't imagine that they're going to be in that location forever. And there are some banks that are virtual only. They have no brick and mortar anywhere. Now, I haven't made the leap to that yet, but plenty of people do banking with banks like that. Of course, they're shopping. We're all familiar with Amazon. Now, they have brick and mortar. They have big warehouses that are, you know, off the interstate. Can't see them. There's telemedicine. I did go see my doctor recently, and I have been to an ER. Those things are necessary, but I've also used a teledoc to get a couple of prescriptions renewed because my doctor's a little bit hard to get into. So I've used teledocs for that. And there are other industries as well. There's online legal advice. There's online, you know, wills and contracts and things like that. Those have been around since before the pandemic, but I think the pandemic has gotten those things that a lot of people have upped their game. Some people have upped their game a lot. And so what I'm getting around to wondering is, Chris, you said that at the company you work with, that they're going to be scaling back on their brick and mortar footprint because they don't need so much space anymore. And I'm wondering, where is that leading us? Is that going to, I just did a webinar yesterday on the possibility of broadcasters not having hardly any brick and mortar anymore, but having data centers, whether it's a private data center that they own or just a little, a good size room or a small room in their existing brick and mortar facility or a smaller brick and mortar, or using Amazon Web Services or all that kind of thing. And yes, there's plus and minuses. There's internet connectivity that people worry about. I get that. Where do you think, though, that we're headed? Will we have a day when everybody can work from home except the person who's manning the prize closet at the radio station so that people can come pick up their prizes or their tickets or whatever? Of course, that can be done. A lot of that can be done electronically as well. Give me your vision. Where do you see this going? balanced with the need that people have for camaraderie, you know, for getting together and looking at each other over a table. I'll shut up and maybe Steve or Chris, whoever wants to butt in first here and give me your thoughts.
I'll jump in first because I'll let you in on a little secret. I'm moving our facility in La Crosse to, you know, I mentioned this earlier, to a much smaller building, but just due to weather and scheduling concerns, all of my playback machines and STLs and everything are remaining behind at the old facility for a while. So we are going to be in a building where I have a studio, a couple studios, but all of the playout, all of the STL, everything lives in an entirely different building. It is a data center. So essentially you walk into that new building that we have, that new office, and there's nothing live happening there. Everything is asynchronous. So we're already starting to do that. Now, you know, eventually we'll move everything in, but even then I'm going to have a lot of the functions from another one of our facilities there as well, even though we're keeping that small office open and we'll have staff there doing broadcast stuff. So it's already happening. It'll start to move faster and faster. And I think the hardest part, and Steven could probably jump in on this for sure, is it has been so hard for us as tech people to trust the technology to do that without leaving us high and dry when it fails. So as we start to learn that, you know, as the technology becomes more mature and we're starting to trust it a little bit more and we're starting to be able to figure out good ways to build in redundancy to the system, we're becoming more and more comfortable with that.
Yeah, that's right. Trusting those data centers for all your play out it's still not quite 100% there. I can probably, there's at least once a year where our friends at Microsoft or Google, Amazon, their systems go down, you can lose email or lose your website for a couple of hours, even if you've got them, you know, on different data centers and that sort of thing. You're hedging your bets, but in a live broadcast point of view, having everything in a data center to play out at this stage, there's still that fear of, yes, when that one time that they go down, you could be off air for a certain amount of time. At the moment, I'm happy to hedge my bets and have some things in data center and some things on premises, and especially now with even doing things like micro MPX and that sort of stuff from the cloud, you can go easily straight to your transmitter and straight to air. But even with a recent project that we had was we amalgamated all of the three phone systems for the three stations that we look after into one phone system in the cloud. Now we have it in one data center in Sydney and one data center in Brisbane, and with failover. But there are still the times, there's still going to be a point of an outage, and you're relying on SIP trunks as well. So I would say it's up 90% of the time, but I think that's the thing in broadcast, which is a bit different to our full IT friends, is that, broadcast, we do want things being 99.99% whatever reliable and, uptime, whereas at times, in the IT world, you can't get those sort of SLAs. Unless you're spending a heck of a lot of money. I guess is the thing.
Yeah. Interesting.
See, the way I've approached it is we kind of live that way now. And you're actually taking it one step further, Stephen, when you're talking about the cloud. I haven't gotten there yet with Playout. I still have it. It just may not be in our building where we're at. And, I came to the realization of no matter what I do, I'm placing my eggs in some basket. You know, if we have the stuff on premises, we could lose information there. STL could go down, whatever. So I'm still having to build in redundancy from somewhere. So what it has opened up to, though, is, for example, to move into this new building, you know, I have several options for program delivery, and it doesn't necessarily have to be there. You know, we're talking about what if we can't get a microwave shot from that building to the transmitter site? Well, that's why we're not moving yet, is because I already have an established site that has a really good microwave shot and everything else. Well, you know, why not leave the playout machines there? They've been there the whole time. You know, we don't need to be in that building to manage that. I already have, you know, backup streaming from other places and some other ways to make that happen. So I think we're seeing more of that where, you know, I look at it and say, well, we're already, because we're not manned most of the time, we're already leaving these servers sit somewhere. So let's make it a place that may be a little more convenient for us. And that may not be in the building that we generally operate out of. So I think we're going to see some more of that happening too. And maybe it's a, you know, local data centers or, you know, something like that. You know, I've talked about doing two sites where I've got another transmitter site in that area where American Tower is putting in fiber. Well, that's a great place to put a couple of machines as well. And I could use that as a backup data center with backup playout systems. I could switch to those if this other site goes down. So, you know, I'm not to the cloud yet because of those, you know, those are outages that I have no control of. I'd rather, you know, if there's going to be an outage, I'd rather have it in a place where I can actually manage it. We may still be just as down, but I'll feel better that I can do something about it.
I like that. We may still be just as down, but I'll feel better. I like that. We may have a show title there. and you know, I was just thinking, I've got two studio locations in Mississippi where if the garbage truck gets off track by 20 or 30 feet, we'll have an STL tower down. And at one of the locations, that'll be 5 radio stations. So even if you take in care of things on your own, and yes, there's, you know, there's only so much you can do. I mean, a garbage truck's pretty big. So it's you know, certainly possible for a garbage truck to really be in error and knock over a guy wire and take down your STL tower, no matter how much you try to protect things. So no matter what you do, you always got some kind of vulnerability. Yes, we have a little bit of backup. I could get 3 stations back on the air via the internet, assuming the tower didn't fall over and knock over the fiber pedestal that's outside. So, you know, there's things that could happen. Hey, we got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with a final thought from Stephen Wilkinson and Chris Tarr in just a minute. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcast Bionics. We'll be right back.
Camera One from Broadcast Bionics, designed to bring video to your audio content, visualizing radio and podcasts for social media. Camera One can automatically create, capture, and brand professionally switched video for live streaming or upload, making your production shareable. Control and configure using a web browser on any device. Camera One is available as a 4-camera or 8-camera system using the Blackmagic A10 Mini range, including the A10 Mini Extreme. You can use cameras to suit your studio and your budget. You'll need one camera for a studio wide shot and usually one camera per microphone. A standard multi-channel sound card or IP driver monitors audio from each studio microphone, and we work natively with Axia systems. Ideally, this will be a post-fader feed from each mic, although you can use pre-fade audio or a mic split if that's all you have available. These audio levels are used to intelligently switch the video feed when each contributor is talking. You can also group microphones together into one shot and use the audio from a mixer's aux bus. You can use Camera One's auto switch feature, or disable it and switch using the on-screen buttons or the buttons on the ATEM. Recordings can automatically start when you tell the system you're on the air. This on-air indication can be linked to your studio's red lights via IP or an Avantech Atom GPIO interface. You can quickly browse all the videos that have been automatically created during your broadcast, download them, and post. Camera One is a user-installable system. You'll need a good-spec Windows 10 PC, i7 with plenty of storage, and 16GB of RAM. It's better if this machine isn't used for anything else. Remember, you can control the software in a web browser on another device on your network. Camera One, a thrifty way of creating scroll-stopping video from your show or podcast from Broadcast Bionics.
These people at Broadcast Bionics, so clever. I mean, clever is just not even a good enough word. I mean, so intelligent, putting together tools to help you produce fantastic radio and fantastic video to make your social media really work for you. And whether it's a full-time stream or social media hits, Camera One can be an amazing tool for you. Check it out. Go to bionic.radio, bionic.radio, or Broadcast Bionics. We thank them so much for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, gentlemen, we've just got a couple of minutes. Stephen, I'm going to hit you up first. Do you have a final thought for us before we head out today?
I mean, I think, yeah, as we were talking about before, backups and disaster recovery is important. One of the projects that we're looking at this year is interconnecting our facilities from live audio point of view. As well as integrating all of the playout systems so that any station is available on any studio facility, whether that's involved being able to voice track at any facility, but it's also being able to play out from any facility in the event of a catastrophic failure. So sort of been working on a lot of risk management last year as an organization. So these are one of the things, as well as DR play out from the cloud in an absolute worst case scenario. That's sort of things that we're looking at for this year.
You know, we used to have an hour of programming on reel-to-reel, or maybe on cassette, or maybe on a hard drive or a thumb drive in more recent years. Now, I think more and more automation systems are making it easy for a given playout machine to be any of your radio stations. And you can just attach it to the log you need it to, play it out. And so a couple of my stations, we've got an extra playout machine in case one of them dies. Next step is going to be to get a playout machine at transmitter sites in case we need to get that done. Chris Tarr, we just got another minute or two left. Do you have a final thought for today?
I do. As much as, and I try to find a way to put this that doesn't sound bad, but it excites me to see some of the technology and some of the ideas coming out of this. People like Steven and some of these other guys that we've talked to, with just some of these new things that we're doing that we're forced to do, it's kind of forced us to be resourceful and really take another look at how we do things. You know, radio is very much one of those businesses where we do a lot of, well, we've always done it that way. And, you know, there's a whole new way of looking at how we do business and how we do broadcasting. And I find it so fascinating and enjoy it so much because it's just a big learning experience. And it's a whole lot of fun. I mean, it's, you know, we've gone from the days of, you know, these utilitarian studios with cart machines to, you know, voice tracking and different technology for program delivery and things like that. So I still am very excited about, and I think too, sidetrack just momentarily here, that, you know, there's been a renaissance of radio during this because of people having to, you know, kind of stay close to home. Radio has kind of come out on top again as a medium. And so not only is radio kind of been revitalized and rediscovered, but at a time where the technology is such that, you know, we're starting to be able to do some really cool things. So I'm very excited about where the future's headed and what's coming down the pipe.
Cool. I'm excited about it too. I'm excited about over the next few years, how we figure out to hybrid, operations like we've always had them, or virtualized operations as things like containerized software, as we develop, the ability to ordinary engineers like us to use things like Kubernetes to control a variety of containers or virtual machines. It's going to be interesting to figure out what's going to be best for all that. And I'm sure we'll be here covering it and talking about it. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Stephen Wilkinson, thank you for joining us from Sydney, Australia on Friday. I'll look for those Powerball numbers in the email, okay?
Yeah, you're welcome.
Chris Tarr, thank you so much for joining us as well. What are you looking forward to sports-wise, Chris, if anything, in the next few days or weeks?
Well, I know where you're headed with this, but we have a bye week this week, so there's no game. So, next week, though, we'll be looking for a Packers win.
Who are they playing? Do we know?
I do. I don't remember off the top of my head, though. No, that was all decided this past weekend, and I've been so busy, I haven't had a chance to look. All I know is that right now we're having bye weeks all the way through. We have a bye week, and then we're doing home field advantage for the next game at least. As long as we keep.
All right. Well, hey, your internet's breaking up a bit, so we'll say goodbye to that. And I know Chris Tarr is a part owner. Ah, green. Ha, ha, ha. There you go, Stephen Wilkinson. Thank you. And you know, Chris Tarr is part owner of the Packers. He's a part owner there. And so he has even extra reason to root for an Aaron Rodgers win there for the Packers. All right, we got to go. Hey, a huge thanks to Suncast for keeping us on track and switching the show today, producing it. Thanks very much. Thanks to my friend Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. Really appreciate Chris Tarr being here, helping out and co-hosting with me. And thanks to Stephen Wilkinson coming to us from Sydney, Australia. Hey, next week, I believe Jeff Welton is going to be with us. And you know what a crazy time that will be. So join us next week here on This Week in Radio Tech.